A61A, The Rules for Studying the Seven Synonymous Terms for God in Science and Health. Number 1A.
Now, this session is devoted to the investigation of the meaning of the seven synonymous terms when analyzed from the text of the Christian Science textbook. The synonymous terms for God, as we know, define the nature of God. So actually, when we undertake a study of the seven synonymous terms, we really are undertaking a study of the most fundamental subject of the biggest thing in the world, namely to analyze what is meant by that indefinite, undefined term, God. What means G-O-D? As Mrs. Eddy says, it means mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. But then we can ask, what does Mrs. Eddy mean by these seven terms? Especially as she uses them differently than in common language, she capitalizes these terms. Therefore, our investigation is to find out first and foremost what is meant by the term mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. We are not asking yet how do these seven synonymous terms operate in being. All we want to know is what does Mrs. Eddy mean by the term mind, spirit, soul, etc. So, by going to the textbook, we go to the best authority which we have and asking the textbook what these synonymous terms are, we naturally have to be to use certain rules in order to investigate it correctly and scientifically. Now, every investigation one does in every field of science, whatever that is always an investigation that starts somewhere, and one never arrives on the first go, so to say, at the definite answer. We know that there is that method of approximation which is always used in every science, the method that starts with the best of our ability, with the best of our knowledge, and tries to see how far we go and how far we get with this method. And as one goes on, one finds through experience, through new situations, that perhaps the method is not quite correct, or that our findings are not quite right, and therefore it is always an attitude of a scientist to be willing to correct one's own findings. This is a scientific attitude, it isn't a religious attitude. The religious attitude within ourselves always says, I want to have the blunt truth right away and I stick to it. The scientist always questions his findings. That's the scientist. He knows that he just can know so much as his present understanding reaches, and he knows that his present understanding is always limited, that there is a big field ahead, that there are other aspects ahead of which we do not know yet anything and which may change the finding. So we are always on the way. Even Jesus said, I'm the way. He didn't say, I'm the end. I'm the final end. I'm the way, and we can go on that way and must learn by experience. I must have that willingness of correction. And especially in this study, you will find that if we go out from the hypothesis that we have never heard anything of the Christian Science textbook, that we have never heard anything of the seventh synonymous term, that we start out blank and now investigate through the text what Melchizedek means by these terms, then we can be quite sure that at the beginning we may make many mistakes which only afterwards are uncovered to be mistakes and therefore must afterwards be corrected. So such a study can never achieve in the first reading or in the first study a final finding. Therefore, it is very good, and this is also a scientific method, that if one approaches a new subject without any preconceptions and without any pre-knowledge, that one is very careful only to take as findings those findings which seem to be very conclusive, and that those findings or those possibilities where one feels one is not quite sure if they are right or not, one is better off by leaving them out at first and just build first on very conclusive findings. So we will do that too. Why we do that? I will afterwards still find that even if we feel that we are only writing out conclusive findings, that they are not as conclusive as we think they are. But that is, as I say, right insofar as we have to start somewhere and then see if we are led further to further insight. So let's see that in investigating the synonyms, we first build up, say, a knowledge on which seems to be secure, which seems to be free from speculation. So that when we ask ourselves what are the characteristics of each synonymous term, that we want to find rather a short and reliable list of ideas than a big, extensive, but perhaps unreliable list. And rather build on a smaller list, but that more or less reliable findings. So we will start with the textbook. Take a sheet of paper and you write, say, in a column on the left-hand side, the page and line where the synonymous terms appear. As you don't have the compendium mind with you, I'm going to tell you line, page and line. And then, when you have written that down, we go and read that passage. Then we write out on that line the findings, if possible just with one term or two terms, and so go on. All right. So the first reference in the textbook is in preface, Romans 9, line 18, Romans 9, line 18. Now we turn to the textbook. The line which I give is always the line where the synonymous term appears. And what we are doing is that we read, just so that we can get on a bit quicker, we just read one sentence that sentence wherein the term mind appears, we must use some kind of discipline. What, how we do it like this, I spell out, as I did it, page and line, then you turn to that, and then I make a pause for about a minute or a minute and a half, according how long the sentence is, and everybody reads that for himself. It's better than to read it out loud so that everybody can think it, think about it. He can read it twice or three times. Then when you read it, you are asking, you ask yourself, now, what characteristic of the nature of mind is brought out here? So, again, I repeat it before you read. Just listen first to what you have to do. You read that, ask yourself, does that sentence tell us something about the nature of mind, what the term mind it implies? All right. So, the first one is, as I said, Romans 9, 18, and you read it, and I shut up. Now, what you feel, Mrs. Eddy says, what mind, how mind is characterized. You say, it's the mind of Christ, intelligence, one of the intelligence, enlightenment, perfection, think about Christ's truth to enter in, mind is active, oh, all right. We have enough. We have enough wrong answers to work with it. All right. Up to this point, the answers there. I have forgotten who said it, so I'm absolutely free. Where the mind is characterized by the Christ, because it's the mind of Christ. Others said it is intelligence, others enlightenment, others perfection, others the Christ truth to enter in, that mind is active. All right, now, is that true? Does she say what mind is here in this way? Oh, now we have a no, huh? Big protest. The nature of mind, huh? How? Yeah. How she defines, actually here defines, huh? What is meant by the term mind? What characteristic is brought out by the term mind here? Or did I put the question not exactly clear? We are asking, mind is for us a Chinese term. We don't know quite what mind is. We have never heard of it. And so I want to know what qualities are implied here as the meaning of mind. Waiting, we have another one. All seeing. Hmm? All right. Oh, well, that's wonderful, huh? So, that's wonderful. Let's stay at that. I ask you, where in this sentence does Nietzsche Zeddy say that mind is intelligence? Nowhere. How on earth then did we arrive at an answer? I don't know who did it, who answered it anymore. how could we arrive at an answer, intelligence? Why did they arrive at that? If the term not even appears in the text. If you speak very loudly that everybody in this classroom understands it, is intelligence mentioned in this sentence? No. Then this is interesting. Why did somebody, and I guess many, feel that mind is intelligent if it's not there? Beg your pardon? She is willing to listen to this mind. What has that to do with intelligence? She wouldn't listen. She wouldn't listen to a non-intelligent mind. So because Christ's mind, it must be intelligent. But she says that because of Christ's mind, it must be intelligent. No? You said enlightenment. Is the term enlightenment in here?
No?
Take a pardon? It implies. Who implies? Take a pardon? We imply. Wonderful. Huh? We imply. She doesn't say so, but we imply. All right. Somebody said perfection. Is perfection here a quality of mind and brought out as a quality of mind? No. And yet somebody said so. Now, you said waiting. Does she say that mind, a characteristic and inner nature of mind, is waiting? No. How on earth did we arrive at about 10 answers? About 10 answers that is not in a sentence. Either we don't know how to read, or we read something into it which is not there, or we ask the wrong question. Yes? All right. In order that our rules, which we can find, are in conformity to those more or less that we had on the other side in Atilamar, I take up the answer waiting. Is waiting here a characteristic of mind? Yes, it is not. So why does she use waiting here? Who is waiting? Huh? She is waiting. Therefore, would this bring out what? That this answer is defining a characteristic of Mrs. Eddy, huh? And not of mind. Yeah? Therefore, we have to be careful, and this is a mistake that is made all through the textbook, namely that we have to see that we are asking what is the nature of the synonym itself, and not what is the attitude to that synonym. We have that over and over and over, that we must see that we ask about the subject implies. The subject is mind. The subject is not Mrs. Eddy. And is not Mrs. Eddy's attitude to mind. Huh? All right. This would mean rule one. Huh? We write down rule one, which I hope is clear. Rule one would be, the answer must always name a characteristic of the synonym. Semicolon. It must say something about the nature of the synonym itself, and not, for instance, man's attitude towards a synonym. Did I go too far? The answer must always name a characteristic of the synonym. Semicolon. You have that? Then the second part, it must say something about the nature of the synonym itself. It must say something about the synonym itself. And not, for instance, man's attitude, toward a synonym. And not, for instance, man's attitude toward a synonym. That's one point. Now, other answers. Many have answered with intelligence, enlightenment, perfection. You see, answers of ideas, they are ideas, that are not in the text, that are actually not spelled out in the text. In that whole text, there is nothing about intelligence, that mind is intelligence, that mind is enlightenment, that mind is perfection. No, nothing is said about that. Can you see that? Therefore, a big rule is to stick to the text. Can you see? There's no use. Can you see now, if we had written down everything about mind, which everybody would have said in that first go, we already would have a list like this, and nothing would be in the text of all that. Now, that is naturally not a scientific analysis. Rule two. Try to answer comma, as far as possible, comma, with the letter of the text. With the letter. With the letter. With the text. Using the terms, the words of the text. Because then we know that's what Mrs. Eddy said, not what we said. With the letter of the text. Okay. I come back again to these answers. Why do you think? With all honesty, we got these answers. Why do you think these answers have been given? People projected already that which they knew about mind into it. You see? Which means it is not an objective analysis. It's a subjective interpretation, a humanly subjective interpretation. Everyone has interpolated into the text his subjective interpretation. This is a very, very dangerous thing to do. Very dangerous. Because then we mix up the absolute text with our human subjective knowledge or beliefs or attitude or whatever it is. that the worst point, really, which we have to consider all through our analysis, therefore, rule 3, don't give your subjective, let's say, don't give your humanly subjective interpretation. Can you see, from one reference, we already have found 3 great rules to obey. There are rules that we disobey usually in our reading. And you can see how we must have read the textbook up to now, that we have read into the textbook much too much our subjective interpretation. We still don't know what actually is here a characteristic of mind. Somebody said, mind of Christ. Is that a characteristic of mind? No. Mind guides. Where do you have guiding in it? She is waiting for the mind of Christ, and so mind is guiding. Is that true? Does that conform? The answer is mind guides. Is that true? Does she say that mind guides? No, she doesn't. Not at all. She doesn't. Huh? All right. So, where are we? No, no. I mean, what does or how does Mrs. Eddy characterize the term mind, the meaning of mind? How can you know now what mind is? Just think mind is chochicha. Now what is chochicha? What would you get out of this term if you would say that Mrs. Eddy was waiting for the chochicha of mind, of Christ? We don't know. So we don't know. Are you happy with that? Sandy, you are not happy. Yes, and that we are not allowed to do. Ah, right. We are only allowed now. Quite right. That's English grammar, huh? Yeah. So, what is our finding? Nothing, huh? Just nothing, huh?
Why don't you use the word mind at all?
Yeah.
Why didn't you use truth?
When you ask me that, then you ask about the operative sense of the synonym. And not, does she, through that sentence, define the term mind? Can you see why I was so explicit at the beginning that I said, we are in this study only, at the beginning, interested to know what is the meaning of the term mind. Chochicha. What is the meaning of chochicha? You see? Well, we must say, she doesn't give an answer here. Huh? Therefore, the question is quite right. Why does she use that term? Because every synonymous term has also an operational sense. Therefore, she does not need to define in every sentence what mind is, what the term mind implies, which would actually lead to another rule. Where are we?
Four.
All right. I must, in Asilomar it was a bit of a different way, or that come. Rule four, not every sentence with a synonym in it defines the meaning of the synonymous term. Defines the meaning of the synonymous term. Now why? Let me say something. Can you define me so that I'm defined in such a way that I can no more be confounded with anybody else? Is that possible? Yeah, sure, huh? Or I wouldn't have an identity. So can you see what we do? We ask, what is the identity of a synonymous term? We ask, what is the identity? What builds up, so to say, the identity of a synonymous term? Therefore, in order to define the identity of a synonymous term, you would have to use all those characteristics that characterize me, and therefore distinguish me from anybody else. Wouldn't you say so? So that when you talk about Max, you know exactly whom you mean. Now, if you get a letter from somebody and said, Max was also in Wilmington, then in that sentence, Max appears. Does that define me? No. Can you see why we have a lot of sentences, which have not as its purpose, so to say, to define the synonymous term? And yet we use them, must use them, because Max has been in Wilmington and not the president, has been here. Oh yes, he has been here too, perhaps. Can you see the operational sense is something else than to define the nature of the term, of the word, let's say, of the word mind? Yes. So we have already four rules. Okay. That's that, So we leave it. There is nothing in that sentence that would define the nature of mind here. She presupposes that you have a knowledge of mind, or that at least you get it when you read it again. We come to page Roman 11. Roman 11, line 25. And you read that sentence. Now, what does it say about the meaning of the term mind? Scare everybody, all that. Well, only with the mistakes we arrive at the rules. I don't think you do worse than the others. They have done the same thing, exactly. Yes. Does she say something about the inner nature of mind? No? Yes? Healing? Would you feel healing? Think about mental. Yes? Where does she say in this sentence mental? Which rule did you not obey? Don't be frightened. That's okay. Which rule didn't you obey? Huh? Rule? Which rule? Rule 3, huh? No. Rule 2, huh? The answer did not in any way refer to a term or a quality that is expressed in the text. Therefore, it was really not obeying also rule 3. Huh? It was a humanly subjective interpretation. Can you see that? We must make these mistakes. Please make them. Huh? Because only when you make the mistakes, you really get the flow of it. Huh? Yeah. So actually, you would, up to now, you would have heal or healing. But there is mind healing. Would you feel that that is conclusive? No? Why not? It's operative. Here she doesn't use the term in an... You know, yeah, I can now see. With an operative sense, I don't mean that mind would not have within itself a power sense that operates. Huh? It's the whole term in relation to others, huh? Is an operative sense. Well, what about healing? Heals? You're not quite sure, huh? So, all right, now. Just a moment. We take one after the other. Has mind healing a school? No. Mind healing doesn't have a school, huh? That's not the nature of mind, huh? Oh ho, ho. Then the school is an object, huh? For mind. And not mind itself, huh? If I have a school, then you don't describe me as a school, huh? And you don't say my inner nature in order to define me is that I'm a school. Not quite, huh? Well, you know, we giggle, huh? But, that's right, it's nice to take it easy. Huh? But actually we giggle at us all, huh? Because that's the way we were reading our textbook. Just interpreting into it, just what we like to interpret into it. But Andy, are you a school teacher that you came with grammar and structure of sentences, or? Oh, no. Yeah, no. You didn't quite understand, because you came with grammar, huh? And that one should read proper grammar and no proper grammar. Have you been a school teacher? No. Oh, never. And still you know that. Good. Well, you know, you have to know grammar, huh? I mean, not only reading words, you have to know grammar, and you know, have to know what is the subject of the sentence, what is the object, what is the verb. What is, and so on. Yeah.
I think that healing does not describe mind, but mind describes how the healing is going to be.
Yeah?
You cannot use healing
It cannot use feelings. Uh-huh.
Because mind is the type of feeling.
With the type of feeling, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't give you the answer, you know. But if you come to such a point, you see, where you are not absolutely clear, then what do? Take it in or leave it out? Leave it out first. Huh? There are plenty more references on mind. There are over 700, and there is a chance that things come out rather clear. All right. So at that point, you just make nothing and you leave it, because you will have to study it the second time and the third time, and little by little things get clear. But you see, if you take in too much of inconclusive answers, very soon you have a very sandy foundation. What's wrong about that now? Oh, you're fine. All right. So we go to the chapter on prayer. So that actually that whole preface, we didn't learn anything. All right. Are you ready? On page 111. One, line 11. Now, how is mind defined here? Do we find a characteristic of mind? Divine. Why do you say divine? Because it's divine mind. Would therefore this be a defining mind? Say divine. Does it define mind? Yeah. Huh? As it is here, huh? You can't say no, huh? She says so. Huh? Oh. All right. Again, quite serious. She says the divine mind. Does she characterize mind by the term or by the quality of divine? Yes or no? Yes. All right, then that would be a characteristic of mind. Hmm? And you would have to write down divine. Huh?
Right.
Huh? Right. All right. So you write down. You can't sidestep that at the moment, at this point. Huh? If you don't know anything else, huh? Then she actually says that that mind has the quality of being divine. All right. So we write down divine. Is that all what she says about mind? Just one after the other. Mind reading. Is that true? Why not? Which rule did you not obey? Huh? Two and three, both. You disobeyed rule two and three. I don't know what you thought. I only know that because you thought, you were interpreting humanly. You thought. I like, is it in the text? Mind reading? No. What does she say about mind?
Knowing.
Do you agree?
No.
Oh, no. Yeah. Are you see?